Good afternoon, Your Honors. Dan Bennett on behalf of Progressive Northern Insurance Company. By this time, the court has seen 7 briefs on the matter and heard 1 oral argument, and I don't intend to rehash everything that's occurred up to this point. What I would like to do is just highlight 5 points which I believe would be beneficial to the court's consideration in this matter. The first is public policy. That seems to be Mr. Moore's primary argument in this case, is that somehow public policy defeats the language of both the Progressive policy and the statute. As this court has previously said in Selective Insurance Company versus Lyons, an exclusion based on the specific wording of the statute cannot be avoided as contrary to the statute's underlying purpose. What that means is that the public policy is created by the statute, not vice versa. What Mr. Moore would like to do in this instance is to have the court find that the statute that created the public policy somehow violates the public policy that it establishes. That's circular reasoning, and it fails.
Well, your client's position is that the policy provision cracks the statute, correct?
Correct.
And that the statute was correctly or incorrectly, in this case, interpreted, and properly interpreted should be construed to deny coverage.
That's correct.
At least under this Progressive policy. So I gather that your position rises or falls with how the statute is interpreted. That is, whether it's interpreted to deny coverage or in the way that's argued for by lawyers on the other side.
That's correct, because in essence, I don't believe that it's disputed that the definitional section of the policy in defining the insured in this instance would deny coverage to Mr. Moore.
That basically is the response to your argument about the other side wanting to have its cake and eat it too. Your argument circularly presupposes that the public policy, that is your side's interpretation of the statute, is correct. And I think that's the issue here. And so why don't we turn to that?
Sure. And by the interpretation of the statute, I want to first focus on Section 2118A2D, which is our position is the provision that applies in this instance, which is a provision within the PIP statute that extends the basic coverage in certain instances to named insureds and member of their households, keeping in context that the PIP statute as designed is providing coverage on a vehicle, meaning the owner has to have coverage on this vehicle that extends and provides benefits to persons involved in an accident with that vehicle, either as an occupant or as a pedestrian struck by that vehicle.
Well, before you go further,
sure.
The other side argues, and it may not be a dispute, but I just want to make sure I have it right, that if there is coverage here, it falls, the coverage is created by subsection E. Is that correct?
That's what one of their arguments are, correct.
Do you agree with that?
No, I do not.
Okay, you're saying that E does not confer coverage? That is, if there is any coverage, it wouldn't be conferred by E?
That's correct.
What would it be conferred by if there was coverage?
It would be under subparagraph D.
All right.
Because subparagraph D is that provision which extends coverage under the normal circumstances of what's provided under the PIP statute to the named insureds and members of their household. And in that instance, it only provides that coverage to those persons when involved either as a passenger in another vehicle or as a pedestrian in an accident involving a non-registered and insured Delaware vehicle.
All right, so coverage, if there is any, falls under or comes from D, and D, as you read it, doesn't afford any coverage?
That's correct.
And what is the role, if any, of subsection E in your view?
Sure. Subsection E is a broadening provision of the, actually, I'm sorry, it's a limiting provision of subparagraph C of the statute. Subparagraph C is the one which basically says that the vehicle's coverage has to provide PIP benefits to any person who's an occupant or a pedestrian struck by that insured vehicle. What subparagraph E says is that in instances where that person is a pedestrian, we are going to limit it to those incidents which occur within the state of Delaware. And then it goes on to say, we're not saying anything with respect to the coverage that's provided by subparagraph D. That's because subparagraph D is an entirely different provision which expands coverage beyond those involved in an accident with the covered vehicle to a named insured and member of their household. And that's what's really at issue in this case, is that Mr. Moore is not seeking coverage under his mother's policy as a pedestrian. He is seeking coverage under his mother's policy as a member of the household. And since he is seeking that coverage as a member of the household, it is subparagraph D that applies. He can't be seeking it as a pedestrian because Ms. Moore's vehicle that's covered underneath the policy had no involvement in this accident itself.
But that argument presumes that E is a limiting provision rather than one that expands.
That's correct, and I believe that by the reading of the provision, that is the interpretation that needs to be taken of that, because it sets forth that the coverage provided to a pedestrian is limited to those instances in which the accident involves or incurs in the state. By its own wording, it's a limiting provision as opposed to a broadening provision.
Now, Judge Young referred to the circumstance of having the misfortune of being struck by one of these ill-fated, lesser-insured Delaware vehicles. She must resign herself to that vehicle's limited coverage. And he describes that as a crapshoot that cannot be what the legislature intended. What's wrong with that?
What's wrong with
his statement?
His statement? Because it goes directly against what the statute says. I mean, that's exactly what the statute does provide. Subparagraph D specifically states that coverage to a named insured and member of their household are limited to those instances in which they are an occupant of a non-insured Delaware vehicle or a pedestrian involved in an accident with a non-insured Delaware vehicle. I mean, that's precisely what the statute says. So, once again, you can't say that the statute doesn't intend that, because that's what the clear and unambiguous language of the statute says. As far as going on with that theme, one of the points here also is that, as this court has consistently found, the court cannot rewrite a clear and unambiguous statute. And I believe that that's what Mr. Moore is asking the court to do in his various briefs, is to rewrite how the statute is written.
Mr. Bennett, sure. Let me go back for a moment. You argue that the plaintiff here is seeking coverage not as a pedestrian, but as a member of the household, at least as far as his mother's policy is concerned, correct?
Correct.
Isn't it also the case that the plaintiff is seeking coverage as a pedestrian under subsection E?
No, because in order, this goes back to the Gray decision.
Well, I mean, we're talking here as a matter of record fact, aren't we? Either is or he isn't. Is there any document in the record that, you know, where he declares himself as applying solely under subsection D as a member of the household, but not under subsection E?
Well, the only coverage that he could have under the policy is as a named insured or member of the household, because the because the covered vehicle was not involved with the accident itself. So this goes back.
Well, let's take a look at subsection E.
Sure.
Which says the coverage required in this paragraph shall apply to pedestrians only if they are injured by an accident with any motor vehicle within the state. Let's stop there.
Sure.
If the statute ended at that point, he would be covered. Correct?
But the problem is that subsection E is defining the benefits that are provided under subsection C. Subsection C is the global provision which says the vehicle must provide coverage for all persons involved in an accident with that vehicle, and I'm paraphrasing, as a driver, as a passenger, or as a pedestrian.
Subsection E says the coverage required in this paragraph, and paragraph means, I guess, 2118A, shall apply to pedestrians only if they are injured by an accident with any motor vehicle within the state. Up to that point, that covers the plaintiff, does it not?
But
that's either yes or no.
Well, no, because subparagraph E modifies subparagraph E, I mean C.
Where does it say that? I don't see any reference in E to C.
Because
there is an except clause that follows, but there's no reference, at least in any of the materials that I've been provided, in subparagraph E, any reference to subsection C. So I don't know where that comes from.
Subparagraph C is the one, if you read the statute in succession, subparagraph A defines the benefits that have to be provided. B defines the minimum coverage that's required. C talks about the coverage that has to be provided. And that's applicable to each person occupying such motor vehicle and to any other person injured in an accident involving such motor vehicle other than an occupant of another motor vehicle. The any other person injured in an accident is a pedestrian. Okay? What's then subparagraph D extends coverage, expands to named insureds and members of their household. Subparagraph E, read in conjunction with the other paragraphs, says that when you're talking about pedestrians, I mean the pedestrians that are covered under subparagraph C, because that's the defining coverage of the PIP statute, shall only apply. It's a limiting provision, saying the pedestrians that we've referenced.
So it's a limiting provision, but it applies if they are injured by an accident with any motor vehicle within the state, which is this case, correct?
Except, once again, if you take that logic, then any pedestrian would be entitled to coverage under any Delaware policy, meaning that if Mr. Donovan, if I was a pedestrian and Mr. Donovan struck me, I could come to your automobile policy and say I'm a pedestrian, and under subparagraph E, the coverage required in this paragraph applies to pedestrians if they are injured in an accident with any motor vehicle within the state, and your policy would have to cover me. That reading of the statute doesn't make sense, because then I could come to anybody's policy and say I'm a pedestrian and therefore I have to be covered under your Delaware policy, because your Delaware policy under subparagraph E requires application to all pedestrians in any motor vehicle accident within the state. Well, it can't be read that way. That's too expansive. It has to be read in conjunction with paragraph C to say that the coverage that we're providing to pedestrians only happens if it happens within the state. And those are pedestrians.
Just sure. Change the facts in this case. Instead of Mr. Moore, if it was his mother, would the result be any different?
No, it would be no different, because once again, she would be the named insured on the policy, and once again, looking for coverage under subparagraph D as the named insured.
So, in other words, she buys a policy for her Delaware vehicle, and she's a pedestrian injured by another Delaware vehicle in Delaware. She has no coverage.
She
under
has
her own policy.
Yes, you're correct. She has no coverage under her policy. Okay. The way that the PIP statute is created is that the pedestrian looks to the vehicle that struck them.
Can we get back a little bit to what I recall of the last argument, where there were representations made that, first of all, this is a standard provision in insurance policies, this exclusionary language. And second of all, that other jurisdictions have the same kind of limitations as Delaware with respect to accidents that occur in other jurisdictions. And since that argument, we've asked for amicus to weigh in on this, and I'm not seeing anything that supports either of those statements. Would it be fair to say that from what we know now, other jurisdictions do not have this language in their statutes, and second of all, that this provision in this insurance policy is not a reasonably universal provision?
Well, I think what is fair to say is that the Delaware statute differs from the statutes of other jurisdictions. What you will see often is that the statutes in other jurisdictions will follow the person as opposed to follow the vehicle, which is the way that the Delaware statute is primarily designed. What you will see, as demonstrated by the briefing, is that many of the statutes in other jurisdictions certainly differentiate between where an accident happened. For example, as we've seen in subparagraph E, the Delaware statute limits pedestrians that are struck by a vehicle to those instances in which the vehicle is within the state of Delaware. Other jurisdictions have that same restriction. That restriction has been upheld in several other jurisdictions, including New Jersey, South Carolina, and Florida, meaning that the provisions are only going to apply if the pedestrian is within the state of is within the state at the time, and if the vehicle is not striking a pedestrian within in another state.
So the state-specific
provisions are not.
You're saying that there are three other states that have the equivalent language in their statutes, and that those states are Florida, New Jersey, and what else?
Not as it applies to subparagraph D, but as it applies to subparagraph E. And once again, all of them are slightly different because of the manner in which the state has taken to allocate the PIP coverage for its residents. But there are provisions within other jurisdictions which certainly delineate between the state in which an accident happens.
And do those states interpret their comparable subparagraph E as a limiting provision or as
yes.
one that expands
coverage? Yes.
All three of them?
Well, once again, as far as I know, the cases I have cited in Pennsylvania and are from New Jersey and from South Carolina were both applying instances where a vehicle came into their state, struck a resident in their state, and they upheld the foreign jurisdiction statute, which said that the PIP coverage would not provide coverage to a pedestrian that is struck while that vehicle is out of state.
I'm going to come back sure. to the variation on Justice Jacobs' earlier question, just so I understand your answer. The argument we hear from the other side is that we really should be looking at D, and that when you get to E, what we see is an expansion of coverage rather than a limitation. And as Justice Jacobs was asking you, if you just stop the sentence in E before the word except, one way to read D and E together is that the people in the household, everyone's covered except people in households or the insured get extra coverage when they're injured out of state. So tell me again your response to the argument that everyone's covered if they're injured in Delaware, members of the household and the insureds get this additional coverage if you're injured outside the state. What's wrong with that argument?
Well, and once again, it has to do with the succession of the paragraphs within the statute.
And I've got the book in front of me.
Sure.
I'm looking, and you keep going back to C, but I look at C, and it ends with a period. So unless there's another C that somehow qualifies D and E, I'm having trouble following the succession argument. But since I have the book, help me out.
Sure. Because, once again, if the subparagraph D, once again, extends coverage to named insureds and members of their household, subparagraph E is referring to pedestrians. Not pedestrians in the global sense, but pedestrians, you know, taken in this context, the part that provides coverage to pedestrians is that is paragraph C. And subparagraph E is now limiting it because it says the coverage required in this paragraph shall apply to pedestrians only. That's only if they are injured by an accident with any motor vehicle within the state. Okay, so that's a limiting provision, not a broadening provision. So it's not meant to broaden the coverage that is provided in D. It's meant to limit the coverage that's provided in C.
Thank you.
At this point, I'd like to reserve my remaining time for rebuttal.
May it please the court, counsel, good afternoon, your honors. Keith Donovan for the appellee, William J. Moore. I'd like to start, if I can, in the pieces of the way the questions were asked to opposing counsel, starting with public policy. The public policy in this state that underpins the no-fault statute has been very clearly articulated by this court and by the below courts in many different cases. And it essentially articulates three or four basic tenets that have been applied over and over again.
Well, before you get there, do you agree that the result in this case is driven not by the policy language, but by the statute and how it gets interpreted?
Yes, I do.
Okay, so which statute is critical to your analysis?
Subpart E, 2118A2E, I believe is the appropriate statute to be applied, if candidly, for the exact reason that you articulated. When you read E, E
well,
applies.
What I articulated was only half.
Understood.
And
understood.
The other half, if you'll forgive me, certainly could be read. I'm not saying it should be, but it could be read as an basically an exception that wipes out any coverage that your client would have under his mother's policy.
Well, I think certainly that is opposing counsel's argument. If we follow that line of reasoning, though, the result is somewhat of an absurd result because the result depends upon the state status of the striking vehicle. If we back away from all of these cases and ask ourselves one fundamental question, the driver, that's a poor choice of words in this case, the most important factor that we've been talking about is the registration of the striking vehicle. If Mr. Moore, under Progressive's theory, was struck by a vehicle that was registered in any other state in the United States, he'd have full access to $100,000 of no-fault benefits purchased through his mother's policy. The twist is, if he is struck, again, according to the Progressive, by a Delaware vehicle, that somehow that state status then extinguishes coverage or policy limits that would have otherwise been available.
All right, let's stop there.
Well, why is that absurd? Isn't the entire structure an option with the General Assembly to craft as broad a coverage as the market could afford and the people of Delaware can afford to purchase in order to insure themselves? So when the statutes are written, they're written with a view toward expanding affordable insurance coverage under certain circumstances. The question here is, this particular applicable statute, whether it's limiting or broadening, isn't it the General Assembly's decision about what's absurd and not absurd?
Well, I
didn't the trial court go beyond its role by ascribing its view that this public policy is inconsistent with its own application of logic?
Multiple parts to that. First of all, the absurdity is that the amount of coverage is a moving target in every single case because it necessarily depends upon the striking vehicle's state status and amount of coverage. The absurdity that I'm referring to is it is impossible for a Delaware resident to purchase no-fault coverage and understand what his limits are if he happens to be a pedestrian struck by a vehicle. That's the absurdity I was referring to.
Well, suppose, and I'm just restating the Chief Justice's question here, suppose that was precisely the result that the legislature intended, and they wrote a statute that clearly, by any reading, required that result. The legislature could do that, correct?
They could do that, which is why, from my perspective, it is critically important that we review the public policy. The public policy that
don't we need to know whether the statute that you're relying on, which is subsection D, is clearly and unambiguously calls for the result that was reached by the trial court, or whether it's ambiguous before we start considering public policy or anything extrinsic to the language?
Again, that's a bit difficult for me to answer because I think that subparagraph E is clear.
It is?
It's clear with respect to if you are a pedestrian in Delaware and you're struck by a vehicle, you have coverage. The coverage required applies to pedestrians if they are injured by an accident with any motor vehicle in the state. That's what happened. Mr. Moore was a pedestrian.
But what happens, the rest of the subparagraph E could be read, could it not, to exclude this case, that is your client's case, from that coverage?
I believe that would be an incorrect interpretation because...
I understand, but it could be interpreted that way, could it not?
Again, that opposing counsel is interpreting
right,
that way.
Is that right? Is your position really that the statute is clear, or is it that the statute is ambiguous and needs to be interpreted?
Well, the statute has an ambiguity in the way that you asked that question that, from my perspective, requires the court to look at the underlying policy.
Okay, so the statute isn't clear. At least there is one reading that would support the other side's view.
The statute's confusing. The statute, again, Mr. Bennett referenced the fact that the court has seen seven different briefs, and if you read all seven briefs, you see seven different variations of the interplay between D and E. So I think I have to candidly say that even though I believe that E confers coverage, that there are other readings that can be pulled from those statutes together. Again, which is why understanding what the legislature intended becomes critical.
But before we get to that, that is, in trying to fathom what the legislature intended, don't we start with the statutory language?
We do.
All right. And how do you construe the statute, that is subsection E, which you say is the source of coverage here, to compel the result that you're seeking? And that was reached.
I construe it that way because Mr. Moore was a pedestrian.
No, I'm talking about the statutory language. You know, the briefs on your side, your brief and the briefs of at least the other the
Mr. Zappa.
Talk about policy, they talk about equity, but they don't come to grips with the language of the statute, and I'm asking you to do that.
Well, I think I have come to the grips with the language of the statute. I'm not sure how I can be more clear. When I read subpart E, subpart E requires coverage in certain circumstances, and the circumstance under which it requires coverage is Mr. Moore's case. That's how I read E.
Well, let me ask you this question. Is E saying to Delaware vehicles who provide PIP coverage because they must, that their and they hit a pedestrian, their coverage will apply to the pedestrian?
Yes.
Is that different than saying in this circumstance, Mr. Moore is not a named insured for the as a pedestrian struck by a vehicle from another state? Is that a different issue?
I think it is a little bit of a different issue. There are two.
Well, he's not just a pedestrian in Delaware who's been struck by a Delaware vehicle who's provided PIP coverage, and he can't be excluded from that coverage simply because he's a pedestrian and not either a passenger or operating another vehicle, right?
Correct.
But the issue in this case is he a named insured under a policy whose provision defining named insurers is consistent with statutory language?
Well, I would disagree that it's consistent with statutory language because it presupposes...
Well, it tracks the language.
It tracks part of the language. The Progressive argues that a pedestrian and a named insured are mutually exclusive concepts. I believe that you can have both statuses. As Justice Holland articulated this earlier, you can be a pedestrian who also happens to be a named insured under a household policy, or you could be a pedestrian who's completely uninsured. If you're an uninsured pedestrian, an otherwise uninsured pedestrian, you're covered from the striking vehicle.
Is there language in the sections that we have been cited, both by your colleague and by you, that suggests that under these circumstances, Mr. Moore is not a named insured under his mother's policy because he doesn't fit the definition of a pedestrian who would be entitled to be a named insured?
Mr. Bennett makes that exact argument. That is Progressive's argument. But the definition of insured is predependent upon the status of the striking vehicle, which is, in my view, the impermissible part of the argument.
Is that distinction come from both the statute and the policy? It's not just the policy differing from the statute in making that distinction. The policy language is consistent with the statute that makes that distinction. Whether you think that's the distinction that ought to have been made by the legislature or not. I mean, this is the same legislature that passed the motorcycle helmet bill, where you just carry it on your motorcycle, but you don't have to wear it. So finding an absurd result is hardly remarkable in Delaware.
Your Honor, I hear you and I understand. The best that I can do is read those sections together and read this court's prior cases that explain to me what I have to think about when I'm analyzing those statutes. And I keep coming back to public policy and getting pulled away from it, but the public policy considerations, every one of them articulated by this court, is breached by Progressive's argument.
Well, let me ask the question slightly a different way. As I understand it, Progressive policy tracks the language of D, but it has nothing that really tracks the language of E, or vice versa.
Correct.
And your argument is that the subsection that's omitted had to be included, and it's a violation of public policy not to provide the coverage required by the omitted subsection of the statute.
Correct. That's exactly right. And the result of that, if you take that tact, is what I believe to be, in addition to an absurd result, an unpredictable result.
Right, but before we leave that, it relates to this debate we've been having about exclusions versus what I'm calling the omission of a statutory requirement in a policy. If the subsection that's omitted is required by the statute, you can't omit it or you can't put it in as an exclusion. So that is what really drives your public policy argument.
I would agree. It is Progressive's policy acts as if E doesn't exist. And that's the problem with the language of the policy. It's not that it doesn't track D, it does. It's that it does not take into consideration the impact of E. And in your words, Justice Holland, it simply omits E.
It omits coverage mandated by the statute.
Correct.
I'm with you thus far.
Okay.
That brings us back to E. And I still haven't gotten a clear statement from your side as to how we should interpret the literal language of E so that it would require coverage.
Well,
in this case, for your client under his mother's policy.
Can we agree that the first half of E that you read to Mr. Bennett confers coverage to
like
someone?
Be very simple if the statute ended after the word state.
Yes. And
it doesn't.
It doesn't. I agree, but it doesn't. The except language refers to named insureds and members of their household to the extent that they must be covered pursuant to subparagraph D. Here we have a reference to expanded coverage that is required for named insureds and members of their household for circumstances that occur outside the state of Delaware. I wrote about this. Justice Holland referenced this. D and E read together means that if you're a pedestrian, coverage is conferred, mandated by E. If you are a named insured, forget pedestrian for a second, you may also have additional coverage required by the no-fault statute for circumstances that occur outside the state of Delaware. The confusion, if I might say, is that we don't have the circumstance that deals with the second half of subpart E because the event did not occur outside the state of Delaware. The event occurred inside the state of Delaware, which is why I believe E is the appropriate point for us to focus the analysis.
I hear your words, but they don't relate to the literal language of the except clause.
I think they do. Except as to named insureds and members of the household to the extent they must be covered to pursuant to subparagraph D. So if we look at subparagraph D, the coverage required by D shall also be, that's the added language, shall also be applicable to named insureds and members of their households for accidents which occur through being injured with any motor vehicle other than a Delaware insured motor vehicle while a pedestrian or while occupying any registered vehicle other than a Delaware registered vehicle in any state of the United States. It is that last language that pulls the territorial application of D and separates it from what's contained in E.
So, as I understand your answer to Justice Jacobs' question, if we stopped in E with the word except, everyone would be limited to accidents in Delaware.
Correct.
But by continuing with except, what they're really saying is, remember what we said in D. If you're a member of the household or the insured, you're not simply limited to Delaware. You also get it outside of Delaware.
That's exactly right.
All right. If that is the correct reading of subparagraph E, the next question is, does your client become entitled to the full policy limits under both policies?
Your Honor.
The difference between one, the higher coverage and the coverage that was already paid out, which is what the trial judge concluded.
My gut reaction would be to tell you that he's entitled to both. However, I didn't argue that below, and I'm not arguing that here, because this court has spoken about what's referred to as a double recovery exclusion in the context of stacked PIP benefits, meaning there are multiple decisions of lower courts and the Supreme Court that say when a pedestrian recovers the policy from the striking vehicle and then accesses his or her own household policy, that he or she can only collect the differential. Now, the mathematical effect of that is they get the full benefit of what their policy limits were.
I understand. My question is the ability to, or the right to collect only the differential created by the except clause in subparagraph E, or is it created by our case law interpreting other provisions of policies?
It's not created by subparagraph D at all. It's created by the case law of this court. And again, unfortunately, for me, to answer that question, that question has been before the court on more than one occasion, before the lower courts and before this court. So, it doesn't ring true to me in the context of some other parallel situations, like UIM coverage, but I guess I'm stuck with what the court has said in its previous holdings, which is the differential is what you're entitled to. And interestingly, there's a long line of cases that deal with the fact that pedestrians are permitted to stack coverage in Delaware. And this is something that I thought of when Justice Berger was asking questions of Mr. Bennett. How is it that we have a long history of pedestrian stacking coverage? The only way that history can exist is if the process by which insurance claims have been handled over the last 30 years has permitted pedestrians to first collect from the striking vehicle and then access their household policy. By definition, that's what has to happen to stack that coverage. So, Justice Berger, you're exactly correct that the amicus briefs don't help us articulate what other states do in our context because they're simply not similar.
But, Mr. Donovan, in those cases, there is no question that the pedestrian is a named insured on their household policy, and there is a question here.
I'm not sure. The cases don't tell us. That issue wasn't brought squarely before the court, and that's something Your Honor and I spoke about at the last hearing.
Well, maybe
I agree
that's
with
a
that.
Fair representation, that the issue isn't addressed in any of those cases.
I think that's correct, but when Justice Berger asked, what's the practice? And we were trying to articulate a basis for the practice. I think we can look to our own case law to understand what the practice is, because you can go back 30 years and then come forward and see case after case where it's the DiGiacomo decision and others which say we have this long history of pedestrian stacking coverage. So it may be, Chief Justice Steele, that no one ever raised this particular issue, but the practice has been to permit a pedestrian to reach to that household coverage. Clearly that's been the practice.
You have to assume that either it wasn't an issue or it was resolved in favor of the pedestrian being a named insured. One or the other. And it doesn't answer the question here, where the focus of our attention is on whether or not, under the statutory language or under the policy, Mr. Moore had to be a named insured and therefore could collect from his mother's PIP coverage.
Your Honor, I agree that the other cases aren't on all fours. However, subparagraph E, the history of the case law as we know it, the public policy that underlies the no-fault statute. I can't give you a case because one is not out there, but every single indicator from all angles, if you look at them, point to the same conclusion, which permits access to that policy. And then we apply the offset, Justice Jacobs, that this court previously wrote about in Gonzales.
You keep referring to the public policy. Let me quote what I understand the public policy of the no-fault statute to be. And that's, quote, favor full compensation to all victims of automobile accidents, close quote. Wouldn't it be fair to say, except where otherwise specifically provided as follows? Isn't that what that means? So only in the case of an ambiguity or in a case that isn't covered by the statute with a specific exclusion or a specific definition that would take someone out of a household, member of a household entitled to coverage, then that's the policy that applies. But when there's a specific statute that says, under these factual circumstances, there is no requirement to provide coverage, or the person isn't a named insured, then the policy doesn't apply.
Well, two things. First of all, that's only one prong of four different public policies, but focusing on just the one that Your Honor raised, that there's a countervailing quote that I'll read you from this court's decision, Nationwide versus Seaman at page 920.
I'm not talking about common law. I'm talking about the public policy is articulated by the legislature.
The public policy, again, as articulated by the legislature, the public policy has been articulated by the common law of this court in its decisions. And what this court has said is the law admits of no exclusion intended to deny compensation to a portion of the class of victims which the financial responsibility laws were designed to protect. So, if pedestrians are a group of people for whom the financial responsibility laws were designed to protect, which is undisputed that they are in this case, then any exclusion on that has not been permitted by this court, per the public policy of this court. And Your Honor, the second quote of public policy, which follows the one that you quoted to me, is this: the opportunity to purchase more than the minimum mandatory coverage. That's part of the public policy of the no-fault statute.
You're talking about uninsured, underinsured motorist coverage.
I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the financial responsibility laws of the state as articulated in Nationwide versus Seaman, as relied upon in the no-fault case of Bass versus Horizon. So if the question is, as this court has written, if that's a public policy, how could Mr. Moore purchase more than the minimum mandatory coverages in this case? And the answer is, if you follow Progressive's argument, it is impossible for him, which is exactly why it breaches public policy. It limits full compensation to a victim. It prevents the victim from purchasing more coverage, and it takes away primary responsibility for the medical bills from the no-fault carrier, which is the very point of the no-fault statute.
If a policy had language that did exactly that, you would probably find everyone in the room in agreement with you. But we're not dealing with policy language that violates public policy. We're dealing with an issue of what does the statute say under these circumstances, where the policy language tracks the statute, correct?
Well, my time is up, but if I may answer, we are dealing with policy language that partially tracks a subpart of the statute that I do not believe applies to this circumstance. It omits E.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
The purpose of the PIP statute is not necessarily to provide full compensation, but to provide prompt compensation. And by virtue of the statute, the responsibility for providing that prompt compensation to a pedestrian struck by a vehicle in Delaware is the policy on that vehicle. That is what occurred in this instance. So the fulfillment of the purpose of the policy has occurred. What the statute also provides is expanded coverage to named insureds and members of their household. The coverage sought by Mr. Moore in this instance does not fall into that expansion that's provided under the statute. The statute, we've read it already today, it does not stand for the proposition.
When you say the statute,
subparagraph D.
D.
D, okay. Right. Subparagraph D, as Mr. Donovan suggests, does not limit its application to incidents happening outside of the state of Delaware. It says any state. Subparagraph D, by its definition, applies to named insureds and members of their household, regardless of whether the accident happens in Delaware or somewhere else. Subparagraph E, therefore, cannot be seen as an expansion of the coverage of subparagraph D.
Okay, so your argument is E doesn't provide the coverage because E accepts out or carves out insureds or claimants who are required to purchase PIP coverage under subparagraph D. That covers this claimant, but subparagraph D doesn't provide the coverage in this instance.
That's correct, because subparagraph D applies to named insureds and members of their household. It sets forth what coverage needs to be provided to them. It does not include coverage which is for that person when they are struck or a passenger by a non-insured Delaware vehicle.
The coverage that is provided does not extend to the facts of this case.
Correct. And under subparagraph E, once again, we've already discussed that it's a limitation in coverage, not an expanding of coverage. And what Mr. Moore tries to do is expand the coverage provided in D through subparagraph E.
Help me understand this. Periodically, the PIP limits will be adjusted upwards because things do get more expensive over time. And if somebody wanted to react to that by purchasing additional coverage because they want to get the benefit of the PIP coverage, that they just can't do that when they're going to be struck by another Delaware vehicle because they're at risk that that one is going to be at the minimum, and that's just too bad. And that's what the General Assembly intended. Is that your position?
The answer is yes, and I think it's twofold. The first is when we discuss about additional coverage, we can't mistake it with additional limits. What was purchased in this instance was additional limits, not additional coverage. The coverage under the policy stays the same whether there's $15,000 in limits or $100,000 in limits. Our argument doesn't make a difference as to what the limits on Ms. Moore's policy are. It matters as to what the coverage is. And that coverage does not exist. With that said, there's nothing precluding the purchase of additional coverage. And Mr. Donovan referenced some cases that have shown that there is stacking of coverage in those instances where a policy provided coverage to a named insured under these circumstances. This policy does not. And this policy is consistent with the language of the statute. And to say that subparagraph E is not covered by the policy is incorrect because, as was pointed out in the response to the amicus brief, the language of the progressive policy specifically says that it includes persons injured in an accident involving a covered vehicle through a, except for a pedestrian injured in an accident outside the state of Delaware, meaning that the covered vehicle covers all pedestrians that it strikes in the state of Delaware as required by subparagraph E.
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. We'll take the case under advisement and adjourn.